Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
To begin today's show, we're going to find the easiest possible target we can imagine, and we're going to make fun of that person unmercilessly. And that person is me. I think that every now and then it's probably kind of a good thing to do there on that. And I think the reason why it's sort of good to occasionally make fun of yourself, and in this particular case, it's good for me to make fun of me, is a very simple reason. Here's what I believe. The job that I do every single day, talking to this microphone to all of you who are kind enough to listen, to be completely honest, I don't think you can do this job unless you're a little bit of a loudmouth. You have to be able to be okay sort of shouting into a microphone in order to be able to do this job. You have to be okay with the sound of your own voice, I guess. And just to be completely honest, maybe sometimes you have to sort of like the sound of your own voice a little bit, and you've got to give big, loud opinions. Otherwise, maybe you don't get noticed as much as you need to for a show to gain traction and build the kind of audience you need to, you know, satisfy all the requirements that you need to have satisfied. You got to probably have a little bit of a loud mouth in order to do a show like this. But here's what I also believe, that there's a big difference between being a loudmouth and being a blowhard. Big, big difference there on that. Loudmouth is, okay, I'm going to think about what I think. I'm going to say it as loudly as I can, sort of put myself out there. Blowhard, though, is if I get something wrong, I'm not going to pay attention. I'm just going to kind of blow right past it and keep right on going. In other words, we're going to give big, loud opinions, but hopefully we have enough humility to say, boy, if we got this wrong, let's go back and laugh at ourselves. Let's not be sort of too egotistical to occasionally be brought back to earth and, frankly, in some cases, frequently brought back down to earth. That's what the loudmouth does. Loudmouth gives big, loud opinions, but is also sort of okay being called out when wrong. Blowhard sort of acts like he's got all the answers, sort of acts like he knows everything. And if facts are entered into evidence that disprove that, we just sort of ignore those. So once again, to sum that up, you probably can't do the job without being a loudmouth, but hopefully we don't veer in the direction of being a blowhard, which means we say a bunch of stuff and never go back and kind of call ourselves out on some of the stuff that we got wrong. Now, all of this today is being done for a reason and in service of a topic that I actually think from a football perspective, looking into the upcoming season, is probably pretty important. But I want to set it up by going back to almost exactly a year ago at this time, a couple of things that I got very, very wrong. Now, listen, I'm no different than any of you. You know, as a man or as a person, as an adult, none of us like to have to acknowledge that we were wrong, especially if we were very wrong. And especially if there's obvious evidence of the fact that we were. But in a couple of pretty key ways around this time a year ago, I was really, really wrong. And we don't want to be wrong moving forward. So therefore, let's go back. What is the thing about, you know, if you don't study history, you'll be doomed to repeat it. We're going to try not to repeat some history here. So let's go back and look at how we were wrong a year ago. You'll remember, maybe if you've been with us, that around this time a year ago, you had the ESPN game day host, Reese Davis, who generally speaking kind of like. Reese Davis was going around a year ago saying that he thought that Michigan would be the best team for the upcoming season. And as a two-time national champion, the Georgia Bulldogs, I sort of felt like not acknowledging Georgia in that way was a huge mistake on the part of Reese Davis. And we said as much. And, of course, the facts ended up supporting Davis and not me. So as a way of just sort of keeping ourselves humble, let's go back to a year ago and listening to me be laughably wrong, sort of taking a shot here at the ESPN game day host, Reese Davis.
I think if I had to fill out the ballot right now, based on what I know, you know, the type of production I know I'm going to get, I think I'd put Michigan number one.
That's ridiculous. That's the silliest thing I've ever heard. And here's what kind of frustrates me about this kind of stuff here right now, which is if you ask the average college football fan, hey, what's the best conference in college football? They'll say the SEC. Even non-SEC fans, for the most part, will begrudgingly admit that. But even if that's true, I think what still happens from time to time is is there is an unwillingness on the part of media types and things like that to want to acknowledge how wide the gap actually is. What is the sad trombone sound? Womp, womp, womp. Reese Davis got that one right. I got that one wrong. And sometimes when there's photographic and video and audio evidence, all you can do is just sort of take the L. Davis looked at the scenario around college football a year ago and said, I kind of like Michigan. And while I am not willing to concede that Georgia would have lost head-to-head to Michigan, I'm not willing to concede that. The truth is Michigan did win the national championship. It played better against Alabama than Georgia did. And so even if I'm not quite willing to concede that Georgia would have lost to Michigan if they had played head-to-head, the fact of the matter is Reese called his shot, Michigan winning the national title, and that's exactly how it worked out. But unfortunately, around this time a year ago, that wasn't the only thing that I got really, really wrong, because speaking of Alabama, as hard as we were on Reese Davis for saying that about Michigan, we may have been on this show even harder on Kirk Herbstreit, because Herbstreit was going around on multiple shows talking about the fact that he really felt like Alabama was being overlooked and therefore undervalued coming into the 2023 season. I am not proud of this. I wish I hadn't gotten this wrong. But just to sort of keep myself humble and to set us up for the conversation we need to have today, let's go back and hear me taking some shots at Kirk Herbstreit that, you know, in a roundabout way, Herbstreit ends up winning the battle on, getting the argument more right than I did, once again, from last summer.
Be really careful of listening to David Pollack said that's right when Alabama comes back just throws their trump card down and whips everyone's. I haven't even really like dug in. I'm already leaning to Alabama to win the national championship. Just when you say Nick's done, Alabama's done, Kirby's goodbye, here comes Alabama. They're going to win it all. So if I'm betting right now, I don't even know what it says in Vegas. I'm betting Alabama to win the national championship. At this point, it's guaranteed. We'll see with injuries and what happens, but do not sleep on Bama.
So after Kirk Herbstreit said what he said the other day, essentially the same thing that he said there, and having it pointed out that, hey, you know what, you kind of made the same argument a year ago. That wasn't true. It seems even less true now because of the fact that Alabama was kind of nowhere to be found last year. The fact that Kirk Herbstreit doubles down on that argument would lead you to believe that in this particular case, he simply does not care about getting the facts right, doesn't care, just wants to have something to say when he goes on shows like this. Wow, wow, wow. I mean, Herbstreit at least was not perfect with his prediction, because Alabama obviously did not win the national championship, but Alabama did beat Georgia head-to-head, and there's no denying that. So in the sort of head-to-head argument between what Herbstreit said, what I said, you know, Herbstreit certainly got it more right than I did. So a couple of examples of pretty prominent voices in college football making predictions that went against Georgia last year, me calling them out for it, and in retrospect, it seems like they got it more right. In the case of Reese Davis, almost perfectly right. In the case of Herbstreit, at least more right than me. And every now and then, you just sort of have to stand up and take the L. In this particular case, I do. Now, let me tell you why I tell you all of that. Is because we're sort of moving into that time of year where other people are going to start making their own predictions. And we're going to notice it when they don't predict Georgia, because, you know, a lot of people do think that Georgia will get back on top and be the number one team in the country here for this upcoming season. That's one of those things that obviously we think has a really strong chance of happening. Others will there as well. We're clearly going to notice it when others, go in a different direction. But we don't want to be blowhards. We don't want to be just, you know, sort of against the media person who picks against Georgia just for the sake of doing it. We want there to be a little more substance to it. So I wanted to point out, hey, in the past, when people have picked against Georgia, they've turned out to be right. And we called them out for it. And in retrospect, it seems like we were wrong. But that's not going to stop us from at least noticing today, and I saw this a few days ago, and I haven't had time to get to this, that one of the writers for 24/7 Sports, his name's Brad Crawford, has updated his, you know, it's no longer kind of a way too early top 25. Now it's just sort of a preseason top 25. And he has updated that after like spring practices and things like that. And he's also made a big, significant change at the top. Now, I want to show you this on the screen. And total confession here, I made this graphic. It's a little bit of an assault on the eyes. I won't deny that. But I want to try to fit on one screen what you see happening here is the 24/7 Sports has the headline College Football Rankings, updated post-spring top 25 poll for 2024 season. What was Georgia at number one now sees Georgia at number two. And the team that was below Georgia, Ohio State, they have now jumped ahead of Georgia, and they are in the number one spot. Now, there's no real salacious quote here. What Crawford writes about Ohio State is, no elite program made more power moves in terms of talent accumulation this spring than the Buckeyes did. He says they went from College Football Playoff threat to one of the national title favorites given the roster and coaching staff additions. And the truth is they have been the most aggressive team here in this offseason. Is that enough to move them to number one? I guess different people are going to have different opinions. There's no doubt that's true, though, that they've hired Chip Kelly. They brought in, you know, Caleb Downs. They've done, Quinshon Judkins, the running back from Ole Miss. On and on you could go. They have made some big, bold moves as a way of certainly being all in for a national championship. And this 24/7 Sports writer says they're now number one. Georgia at number two. Not a critical thing to be written of Georgia here. Crawford says there's plenty of ammunition left in the chamber for the Bulldogs, despite seeing its school record 29-game winning streak snapped in last year's SEC championship game by Alabama. He says the schedule is arduous, but this team has enough talent to overcome it. So he's not particularly critical of Georgia, but he is moving Georgia down and moving Ohio State up. And I'm not with this going to do what we did a year ago with Reese Davis and Kirk Herbstreit. I'm not going to pound my fist on the table and say, Brad Crawford doesn't know what he's talking about. 24/7 Sports doesn't know what it's talking about. These guys are going to be wrong. Because when we said some of that stuff a year ago with Kirk Herbstreit and Reese Davis, it was us who turned out to be wrong. So what I want to do instead is have a little bit more of a conversation, perhaps guided by humility, oftentimes not an easy thing for me necessarily, and talk about what needs to be happen so that the 24/7 Sports writer will be wrong. And for those who are saying, because if you said, boy, look at Michigan a year ago. For those who said that a year ago, they turned out to be right. So for some of the people who kind of buy into Ohio State and the hiring of coaches like Chip Kelly and bringing in Caleb Downs and bringing in Quinshon Judkins and bringing in the Kansas State quarterback, Will Howard, and all the moves they've made. By the way, the guys that are still left over that didn't go to the NFL draft, for all the discussion about all of that, here is what I believe needs to happen in order for Georgia to be better than Ohio State for this upcoming season. It's three things, two of which I'm going to talk about right now, and then one thing I'm going to save for just a little bit later. I want to start with this. Here is how, by the end of this season, Georgia can make sure that Ohio State, in its very aggressive offseason, doesn't do enough to surpass Georgia, and how Georgia can take a big step towards winning a national championship again and leaving these Ohio State folks as disappointed as they've now been for years. What is the biggest weakness on the Ohio State roster? For those who, and Ohio State will be no worse than like number two in the preseason polls, and in some of these, way too early type stuff, they may be number one. This is a very strong and deep, very, very talented roster. But what is the weakest aspect of the Ohio State roster right now? Maybe you know, maybe you follow closely, maybe you don't. Here's what I can tell you the Ohio State people think is the weakest part of their roster. It's been an ongoing discussion for more than a year. It's issues along the offensive line. In fact, I want to show you on the screen if you're watching on video. 11 Warriors is one of the websites, a little bit like Dog Nation, I guess, that covers Ohio State pretty closely. Here is their headline after the bowl loss to Missouri. Headline says, Cotton Bowl struggles call for a need to evaluate Ohio State's entire offensive line. The story itself says, one of the biggest questions for Ohio State coming into the season was how it could build a championship-caliber offensive line. The writer says 12 months have passed, and those questions have not been resolved. The writer says while some strides were taken up front over the course of the year, the Buckeyes had their worst performance of the season, the Cotton Bowl, rushing for a meager 2.9 yards per carry, allowing four sacks and eight quarterback hurries. And then also Missouri got 10 tackles for loss. So the very first thing that Georgia needs to do, if it wants to make sure Ohio State does not surpass Georgia during the season, is look at an area where Ohio State's had some question marks along the offensive line and be glad to know this is one of the areas in which Georgia is supposed to be the absolute strongest. An offensive line that drew rave reviews, we're told, during spring practice and expects to be outstanding again because that's, for the most part, what Georgia has been for at least the last 3 years. So if you're hearing all this chatter about Ohio State, whether it be Brad Crawford, 24/7 Sports, or somebody else, I'd take it somewhat seriously, and I would say, hey, pay attention to the Georgia offensive line. That's an area where Ohio State, by its own admission, has some issues, but that should be one of Georgia's top strengths. So if the Georgia offensive line is as good as we think it is, that's one of the ways in which Georgia can make sure it remains better than Ohio State there as well. One more to give you here, too. As I mentioned a moment ago, when it came to the comparison between Georgia and Michigan, I got that wrong. Michigan won the national championship. Georgia didn't. We don't know what would have happened if those two teams played head-to-head, but we do have to admit that Michigan played far better against Alabama than Georgia did. Once again, if you're watching on video, I'll show you a headline that sort of tells the story. What was the one thing that Michigan did so much better against Alabama in that Rose Bowl win over the Crimson Tide? It was getting after quarterback Jalen Milroe. The headline on one website during the game was, the Michigan pass rush sets an all-time college football playoff record for most sacks and a half against Alabama. Josh Dubow from the Associated Press lets us know that the five first-half sacks that Michigan had against Alabama in that game was the most ever in a college football semifinal or a national championship game, surpassing what had happened in 2015 between Clemson and Alabama. That Michigan essentially set a record for how successfully it got after quarterback Jalen Milroe. Obviously, Georgia either didn't or wasn't capable of doing that in its game against the Crimson Tide, and that, we believe, was probably the difference in the game. So once again, to sort of keep with the theme, if you're a Georgia fan and you're hearing some of this chatter around, you know, Ohio State for this upcoming season, knowing that a year ago, chatter about Michigan turned out to, in some cases, be true, how do you see that prevented? How do you keep from having that happen here this year? I think the thing you pay attention to is the Georgia defensive line's got to get back to being great again. It's got to be as good this year as Michigan's defensive line was a year ago, and as Georgia's defensive line had been in two national, at least close to what Georgia's defensive line had been in two national championship seasons prior. So the overall bottom line is this. As a year ago, we had a lot of fun making fun of people who were picking against Georgia, but not all of those people turned out to be wrong. Is Brad Crawford, 24/7 Sports, wrong when he puts Ohio State against ahead of Georgia here right now? Only time will tell. But here's how Georgia can make him wrong. Being great along the offensive line, something that Ohio State wasn't last season. Getting back to being great at the defensive line, something that Georgia really wasn't last season. Those two things can be very significant building blocks into returning Georgia the national championship picture and leaving Ohio State behind them in their wake. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. We're happy to have you with us. No matter how you get to us, video 10 a.m. across all platforms, radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, podcast, wherever you find them. We're just happy to have you here, and so thankful to our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia who make it all possible. Energy-efficient windows and doors. That is what Pella Window and Door of Georgia is all about. It seems like the springtime is that time of year when you think about taking the best possible care of your home. That's what the idea of like spring cleaning is all about. You've heard that phrase, no doubt, throughout your life. Spring cleaning, getting the home in tip-top shape and taking as good of care of it as you possibly can. We believe the best way to do that is to upgrade your windows and doors. And the time for you to do that, we think, is probably right now. And that's why, after all these years of hearing me talk about Pella Window and Door of Georgia, it's time for you to have that free, no-pressure consultation with one of those Pella experts. Let them kind of fill in the gaps and tell you even more about what makes the Pella product so exceptional, whether it be an entry door for your home or the kinds of windows that kind of allow you to have better curb appeal, but also have the enjoyment of what it's going to feel like on the inside. Some really clever, new, very interesting products they also have out there as well. In terms of like the blinds and stuff, the shades are like included as a part of the window. It's amazing stuff they have. And I want you to have that conversation here right now. So stop by and see them, Experience Center there in Duluth, or find them online. It's PellaOfGA.com/DogNation. That's PellaOfGA.com/DogNation. You can also give them a call, 678-638-1429. That's 678-638-1429. There's great savings right now between now and the end of the month. That's May 31st. You can get 10% off a Pella project, plus no payments, no interest until 2025. So stop by and see them. Tell them that BA from Dog Nation Daily said they'd take good care of you. I know they will. You can also invite them to come out and see you. One of those Pella experts will kind of educate you in the entire process in a very friendly, no pressure type of way. It's Pella Window and Door of Georgia. They are viewed to be the best. All right, we've got John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment. Good conversation to be had with John about a wide range of topics, including a look back at some big news last week with a couple of big moves made by UGA. We'll talk about that with John here in a moment. But prior to that, we're going to go around the doghouse, poured today by our friends at Dr. Pepper. And I started a moment ago by saying, hey, if Georgia is going to be better than the team right now that seems to be getting more national attention than it is for the upcoming season, Ohio State, you've got to be great along the offensive line because that's where Ohio State's had some issues. You've got to be better along the defensive line because a year ago, that's where Georgia had some issues. I also believe quarterback is going to be really important here there as well because, once again, Ohio State seemingly has everything figured out on its roster, but quarterback is still a little bit of a mystery. You've got Devin Brown hanging around the program. Is he a part of this? Will Howard transfers over from Kansas State? Is he an upgrade over what Kyle McCord was a year ago? Julian Sayin leaves Alabama to come to Ohio State. Could a young freshman like this really be in the mix for playing time? A lot of unanswered questions there at quarterback for the Buckeyes. By comparison, Georgia doesn't have nearly as many of those unanswered questions. But the one question I think that lingers is just how good can Carson Beck be for this upcoming season? As we told you on Friday, apparently some are wondering, that to a pretty extreme degree. Speaking of blowhard, something I don't want to be, radio host Colin Cowherd, as we played for you on Friday, had a very strange thing to say about sort of how he views Beck right now. And, you know, frankly, he's apparently not too sure about Carson. You'll remember this from Friday's show. This is Colin Cowherd.
You know, Shedeur Sanders, the kid Cam Ward at Miami, who's pretty interesting. There's a kid, Notre Dame got a transfer who's pretty interesting.
No, and Quinn Ewers, people like him, and then there's one more that we're forgetting that's the guy who's most likely to go number one. I talked about it on the show today, so see if I can remember it. But I was just about to look, like, hold on a second. Oh, Carson Beck is the other one, the kid from Georgia that people something.
Yeah. I don't think he's a top five pick. I think he's Georgia good.
I think you're probably right.
So Carson Beck is only Georgia good, according to Colin Cowherd. The guy he was talking to couldn't even remember Carson Beck's name. And we would say that's a level of disrespect, both confusing in terms of what Colin was talking about, and the other guy not even knowing Beck's name is a level of disrespect that seems unfair to Carson. But this idea that Beck is sort of an unknown or kind of an anonymous figure, apparently these, you know, sort of blowhards on FS1, not the only ones who feel that way. David Hale is a reporter for ESPN, and on social media on Friday, he put out something kind of strange that I thought was at least worth pointing out here in light of what we'd said on that day's show about what Colin had said about Carson Beck. This is completely unrelated to the Cowherd thing. David Hale writing on X that I was looking at some way too early mocks for the 2025 draft and it got me thinking. He says, when's the last time college football opened a season with so little true star power? Like, and this is what he says, is Carson Beck really the biggest name in the sport right now? And my question back to David Hill would be, well, is that so hard to believe? I mean, Beck, we're led to believe, has, you know, a very big NIL deal, even if it's not quite as big as, you know, some of the people have said. It's still probably pretty big. He's driving a Lamborghini, for goodness sakes. Like, how much more famous do you need him to be? Now, he's not beefing on social media like Shedeur Sanders all the time, but true college football fans, I think, now know who Carson Beck is, even if the, you know, dude on FS1 kind of didn't. And if, you know, Colin Cowherd thinks he's only Georgia good, I think plenty of people do know who Carson Beck is. But the reason for sort of bringing all this up is that when you look at what Georgia needs to do to be number one, we kind of gave you two things a moment ago. Offensive line is one of those things. You got to be great there because that's where some of your competition might not be quite as good. You got to be great along the defensive line because that's an area in which Georgia wasn't as strong a year ago as it has been. But perhaps it is just sort of fair to say that the next and the other sort of important piece in, you know, kind of telling the story for Georgia this season is sort of rising up and being as good as you can be at quarterback with Carson Beck and removing all doubt whether he can be a household name or, you know, more than just air quotes here, Georgia good. You know, perhaps justifiably there is a much bigger spotlight on Carson Beck for this upcoming season. ESPN writer David Hale says he doesn't really know him, or at least doesn't think he's all that well known. Guy on FS1 didn't know him at all. But by the end of the year, that probably needs to change if Georgia's going to get back to the national championship picture. Now, that doesn't mean you want a celebrity quarterback, the way that, as I said before, sort of feels like Shador Sanders is sort of becoming. You'll remember the famous line from Bill Parcells on this. Parcells, of course, the legendary, you know, former Patriots and Giants coach, won Super Bowl there. You know, he had his commandments for quarterback. His 11th commandment for quarterback was not to be a celebrity quarterback. Parcells famously once said, we don't need any of those. We need battlefield commanders that are willing to fight it out every day, every week, and every season, and lead their team to win after win after win. I think the Parcells' words there are probably pretty wise. No Georgia fan wants Beck to necessarily be an air quotes here celebrity quarterback, getting the attention of writers like David Hale or, you know, blowhards on FS1. But playing well enough to get the kind of attention that maybe he's not right now might be a pretty important step. After all, the Ohio State situation at quarterback, total mystery here right now. The fact that Beck has an opportunity to play so well that he removes any doubt about his own status, that could be a big step towards getting Georgia back to the national championship here in 2024. And that is Around the Doghouse, poured today by our friends at Dr. Pepper. And by the way, Dr. Pepper's got some great new exciting stuff for you here this summer. So I want you to stop by your local Kroger. And I want you to pick up some Dr. Pepper for everything you have going on here this time of year. Of course, y'all know how much I love Dr. Pepper. And for me, it's always been, whether it's the original Dr. Pepper or Diet Dr. Pepper or Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar, you know, that's what I've really kind of enjoyed. But we've got a brand new flavor of Dr. Pepper debuting for this summer. It's Dr. Pepper Creamy Coconut. There's also Dr. Pepper Creamy Coconut Zero Sugar. A lot of folks have already reached out to me, let me know how excited they are about that. It's sort of the perfect flavor and taste for summer. Nothing seems more summery than that. So I want you to try the brand new Dr. Pepper Creamy Coconut or Dr. Pepper Creamy Coconut Zero Sugar. Stop by your local Kroger, wherever you're doing your grocery shopping. You can pick some of that up today. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, we are running way late today. That is my fault. But fun conversation to be had here, and conversation we want to continue here right now. As we get ready to welcome on the great former UGL American, John Stinchcomb. Interesting discussions to be had on kind of all of this, plus the contract extension for Kirby Smart, the contract extension for Josh Brooks. Let's talk about all that right now. Welcome on John Stinchcomb here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I am late getting to John Stinchcomb. I want to apologize to him for that, but we'll jump right into it here. John, what do you make of the fact that it seems like, you know, kind of post-2024 draft, looking ahead to a year from now, that Carson Beck sort of already facing so much scrutiny. In fact, you know, scrutiny of, you know, is he, I guess to use the sort of line of thinking of the ESPN writer here, famous enough to be the face of college football here right now? I mean, I think that Georgia sort of likes the idea of a quarterback that sort of blends in with the rest of the team here and doesn't stand out in the forefront. But if Georgia is going to win a championship, they probably do need Carson Beck to play well enough that he sort of gets maybe the kind of attention that perhaps he's not getting here right now. What do you make of the spotlight that Beck already seems to be kind of in going into this very pivotal year for him?
Well, I think it's laughable when some commentators are talking about Georgia good. I think that's pretty good. What a laughable statement that is. That just means that you don't know him because you don't pay attention, I guess, or you've been so distracted by the NFL draft class this year and the quarterbacks that went to not recognize that Carson Beck was one of the very best in last year's season. So as he continues to develop, I think what we saw in the draft is a lot of guys that had a lot of playing experience and have been in college football for a while. I think NIL has a part in that, and also the COVID year. So some of these players have been around and developed and continue to play even better ball, and I think are more polished than some of the quarterbacks in the past that have made that jump. I think Carson Beck is next in line there. I think he's been a part of a highly performing top-notch team for a number of years, not always in the spotlight, so it's been overshadowed, but he continued to develop behind the scenes, and what we saw last year was a much more polished product than a lot of teams expect for the first year start for a quarterback. And I expect an even bigger jump this following year. I think we can all point to a couple opportunities that were missed last year, and he seems much more comfortable in the system, as all quarterbacks do once they have that, you know, test by fire. And if national pundits don't know his name before, I think that's on them. I think his performance last year spoke for itself, and there'll be even more opportunities for him to carve out a niche on the national landscape. And obviously it's a diverse group for those that have evaluated him, because some have already projected him as the number one pick in the draft. So, you know, for those that don't know, I think it's their fault and less a accusation and indictment on Beck's game.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of this is just a topic we've addressed before, which is that the Georgia offense is probably a little underrated in terms of what it's been able to do. And I guess I'd ask you, John, as a player that's been a part of game plan meetings and things like that, when you think about, you know, Georgia during this kind of national championship era, you know, 2021, 2022, you know, last year when they were, you know, on their way to another outstanding season, just coming up just a little bit short. Like, my theory here is that opposing defensive coaches are spending just as much time trying to figure out the Georgia offense as the opposing offensive coaches are trying to figure out how not to be completely overwhelmed by this Georgia defense. In other words, I think the perception of the average fan, and frankly the average media member at times, is, you know, you're worried about playing the Georgia defense and you get a little bit of a break when Georgia's got the football. But the actual, you know, coaches that compete against Georgia, I don't believe that's the way they view it. I believe they have viewed the Georgia offense as just as capable of doing real damage to them as the Georgia defense would have perhaps been able to do. As someone who kind of knows the game planning part of football because you've been a part of it, would you agree with that statement?
Absolutely. And I think it's been an undervalued piece of Georgia's team for these past 2 years. You're looking at Coach Bobo. You talk about answering the bell. I mean, when Todd Monken left for the Baltimore Ravens, I know there was a lot of concern about, you know, what will this Georgia offense look like? And will we be able to, you know, put up the points? Stetson's last year, there was a lot of great pieces in place. And you're looking at some replacement, including the key position at quarterback. And so the combination of Carson Beck and Mike Bobo exceeded, I would say, almost all expectations for last year's offensive performance. I don't think you can overlook the amount of productivity that Georgia's offense had. Now, it helps having guys like Brock Bowers and others, but that also speaks to the Georgia product that you continue to stack resources. And this Georgia team, I would say, position group by position group, looks even better than what they were able to produce last year. So heading into this season, I think every defensive coordinator is going, man, there's not a lot of holes to try to take advantage of, or, you know, we can attack these spaces. Obviously, the loss of Brock Bowers and him moving to the NFL, you don't have that generational talent. I think Georgia's done a great job of trying to replace that in other ways. One, the development of tight ends. You know, we've got a transfer tight end who is pretty productive in Stanford that I think, you know, people might have already forgotten about. But you look at the wide receiver room, you look at the addition of Etienne in the running backs room, as along with some other highly touted incoming freshmen, and the pieces that are in place for this offense, I think is only complementary to what exists and will carry over from last season into this, with some of the returning starters, including Carson Beck and that front five in front of them.
We have worked together a lot over the years, and I think that over the course of that time, I've come to understand that I probably like a lot of the preseason chatter of who's going to be ranked where, the sort of talking season stuff. I think I probably like that more than you do. Perhaps that's why I do that for a living. So maybe that's why I like it as much as that I do. But I know this is not always necessarily your favorite topic, but I do think the comparison right now between a Georgia and Ohio State is pretty interesting, because Ohio State, we understand the emotion here. They saw their hated rival win a national championship. They have sort of seen themselves kind of recede into the background here a little bit as Georgia's claimed a couple of titles, and as a lot of programs seem to be having success that Ohio State once thought it should be having. And so This sort of feels like the offseason, which they want to change that. This is their sort of all-in moment to say, okay, now we're ready to go out and get the national championship because we're tired of seeing, especially hated rival Michigan, win it. And so what I said, you know, before you joined us was, okay, so if a Georgia fan is watching Ohio State get a lot of the buzz here right now, the three simple ways that Georgia can make sure that it sort of stays better than Ohio State during the season, be better along the offensive line because that's where Ohio State's had some issues. Be better than it was a year ago along the defensive line because that's where Georgia, I would say, a year ago kind of had some issues, and you and I have talked about that. And Carson Beck being more of a solidified option at quarterback than the kind of murky picture with the Buckeyes where it seems like there may be three guys vying to be the starter there, and it's not obvious they have a definitive answer necessarily at the quarterback position. And so, to me, if Beck has the kind of season we think he can have, if Georgia's offensive line has the kind of season we think it can have, if the defensive line is improved, that to me right there is your recipe for getting back to number one overall. What do you make of Georgia and that kind of chatter right now as preseason number one, and how much do you, I guess, look at the steam around Ohio State perhaps being a legitimate threat?
Well, I think this. I think you look at the schedule that Ohio State has versus Georgia has, and I see them having a much easier path. But I'm less concerned about where you start than where you finish. And both teams are highly talented. I think Ohio State, we can all recognize, has done a great job of not only recruiting talent through the transfer portal, but also retaining guys. I mean, they're the amount of investment that they put into NIL deals. You look at the number of all-conference players they returned, and then, you know, they cherry-picked from the transfer portal. Caleb Downs and Judkins, and I mean, they've got some guys now. What they don't have is that opportunity to test yourself pretty consistently, which is what – you know, this new playoff system is going to mandate. And I think Georgia's set up with this season where, you know, maybe they do fall short in a game during the regular season. I'm not so sure that that doesn't make them a better team as they head into the playoffs. But, you know, you're right in the analysis. I could care less where you start than where you finish. And I think Georgia has the pieces in place and the chemistry. As you add some of these players, you know, like you say, they've got three probably very realistic candidates to play quarterback for them that has not solidified that number one spot. How do they develop that chemistry? How do they identify the play sets that they like and what they're going to lean into? Well, if you're playing against, you know, Marshall, and you look at their schedule, all the other cupcakes that they have, I don't know that you really get a good sense of where they land at the end of the season. Georgia, on the other hand, you know, we're traveling to Bama, we're traveling to Texas. I mean, there's going to be some hardened moments for Georgia as they prepare more so than ever for this postseason, where you can have a slip up or two and still be as prepared, if not more so, for that postseason, just because you've been in those big contests and had to face some of the best teams across the country.
You brought up a really good point that I think goes beyond just Ohio State, which is we're in a day and age now where, because the Big Ten expansion, the SEC expansion, almost everybody's going to be playing a tougher schedule year to year. The playoffs are also expanded too, so the path winning a championship is more difficult, but some teams will be playing more difficult schedules than others. In the SEC, we would say that Georgia's probably playing a pretty difficult schedule. You know, teams like Missouri, Ole Miss, who are thought to be contenders, maybe their schedule's not quite so tough. In the Big Ten, you have a very similar situation where if you look at, like, say, the Michigan schedule, to me, it looks much more difficult than the Ohio State schedule, which you mentioned. You know, Ohio State has, you know, opens against Akron, Western Michigan week two, off week three for whatever reason. Then you play Marshall the following week. It's at Michigan State, then it's Iowa. That's an easy cakewalk to 5-0. You do have to go to Oregon, which is an incredibly tough game, but you got to play somebody. Then it's Nebraska at Penn State, Purdue at Northwestern, Indiana, Michigan. You know, that is not the kind of schedule that you know, what we're going to see Georgia play. We're going to see a lot of these SEC teams play. And frankly, even a team like Michigan, I think, in the Big Ten has a much more difficult schedule than that. There's no UCLA or, you know, USC, two other new. There's no Washington on this schedule for Ohio State either. That's a pretty – that's a much easier schedule than a lot of these Big Ten teams are going to have to play. And when you're trying to factor into, you know, whatever your preseason chatter is, seeing who gets the break on the schedule, and whether it be the Big Ten or the SEC, that's got to be a part of the prognostication, doesn't it?
Yes, and I think for the preseason report, if you're trying to be right longest, it's probably not a bad bet to say Ohio State. I mean, you say Oregon, Michigan, who they lost half their team, not to mention their coaching staff. There's going to be a big drop-off, in my opinion, from what we saw last year to what we see this year from them. So Oregon, Michigan, and Penn State, those are the three biggest games that you just said. And I would say Ohio State should be favored in all three. So if you're in the preseason and you're saying, I want to pick a preseason number one that very realistically could go undefeated or maybe one loss, I think it's smart money to put it on Ohio State. If you're saying, who do I think is going to win the national championship? Who do I think has the best team put together? I think Georgia very realistically should be in contention for that number one spot. Their roster stacks up with anybody, and I think they're further along in the chemistry and development of a team as anyone in the country.
Well, let me squeeze in one more thing before we let you go. We talked at the end of last week about the contract extensions for Kirby Smart and Josh Brooks. We said a lot about the Smart stuff on Fridays. I want to focus a little bit more here in the time we have left on the Josh Brooks contract extension. And John, I guess my specific question is, as someone who kind of knows the athletic business here, you're on the athletic board there for UGA, how do you see the job of athletic director shifting in the years to come? Because when you came to Georgia, it was sort of an ex-coach's job. Coach Dooley was the athletic director. And in the last, I would say, 20 years, this has become a little bit more of a fundraiser, you know, sort of bean counter type thing where, you know, you're looking to see, it's almost like a salesperson's job, right? You're trying to raise as much money as you possibly can. It seems like in the future, this is going to be a lot more of a CFO/CEO style thing than it's been before, because I think there's some really tough choices coming up about how you choose to spend money. You know, percentages they're going to players, it seems like that's going to be a part of this. But also, what do you do to keep other sports thriving, and can you keep all the sports just given everything that's going to be going on? I want to set you up to answer however you want to. How do you see the role of athletic director changing in the years to come?
Yeah, well, I'd say Georgia specifically, he inherited a situation where we had fallen behind in facilities. And I think you address that first and foremost, and they have, I think. And that's no fault to Greg McGarrity. I think that was part of the system as to the way Georgia was built. But you look at the amount of funds that have been raised, that's in conjunction and not in contrast with the NIL money that is existing. There is a great swell of support for all things Georgia athletic. But the landscape across all of athletics, it's never been more tenuous. I think with the legislation that's in place and the rulings that could be pending, there is a lot on the line, more so than just what's it going to look like, what are payments going to be to the players of the past 10 years that feel like they got slighted in NIL deals. What are the implications for the other sports? I think the ask for administration, not just the athletic directors across the country, has changed significantly. Obviously, fundraising has been a big piece, but I think just managing what college athletics are going to look like, the amount of change that has occurred in the past 3 years, not that that has fallen to the feet of athletic directors, has been a real challenge. And that is a difficult road to hoe when you don't know exactly where you're going. How do we set ourselves up for success in a landscape across all landscapes where who knows what it's going to look like? I think the closest we've come is trying to see how basketball managed with the AAU world and how they transitioned to professional sports and how some players were getting paid and how do I stay a professional I think there is so many different aspects of college athletics that are new and challenging across the board that it's not what it used to be. The ask of an athletic director from 10 years ago even has very much changed. It's no longer we need to present across the board the best face for our university and try to be competitive, which every athletic director wants to do. Now it's just managing how do we put ourselves in a position to continue to have A, programs, and B, compete at the highest level possible. And I think that's why you see the compensation of a relatively young athletic director get this bump is because it has been hard earned to navigate the space as well as Georgia has. I think Josh Brooks should get a lot of credit for the way that one Georgia football has been able to ascend, but also not at the expense or the cost of sacrificing other sports that Georgia offers.
John, it's fascinating stuff. I appreciate your insight on all of this. It's great to talk to you as always. Hope you have a great week. We'll look forward to seeing you back here very soon on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Palo Window and Door of Georgia.
I appreciate it. BA, go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, the reason why I find this to be fascinating is because when you look at the way in which Georgia expanded the West End Zone, for instance, that's one of the big capital projects Georgia's done in the last few years. A nicer locker room, area for recruits. You notice that when you go to a game. And that was raised through what, like the McGill Society process, inviting people to be a part of that booster organization. They get some fringe benefits for doing that. And, you know, Georgia kind of raises the money and it's able, with a good degree of cost certainty, kind of know what it's getting into as it looks to expand the stadium. My guess is for college athletics moving forward, because of the fact that you're about to have a much larger line item expense than you've had before going towards like what essentially amounts to player salaries, I think the next big stadium improvement, not at a place like Georgia, but across all of college football, if I had to guess, I think the next big stadium improvement for most of these places is going to be done the way almost any business, you know, makes improvements to its building. If you own a restaurant, you need a new roof. If you own the property, you take out a loan and you buy and you get it that way. You certainly don't go to your customers and say, hey, listen, we need you to support the restaurant here, so we're going to have a extra campaign to raise money for me to get a new roof. That's not how you do that. No, you have to take your own risk on it. And I do think there's a degree to which some college programs, as a way of just sort of making the trains run on time, are going to have to take on some more debt. Now, there are a few of these college programs that are already leveraged to the hilt anyway, but I would think debt service is going to become a much bigger, I know this is kind of tedious, but debt service and handling debt and managing cash flow is going to become a much larger part of the athletic director's job than I think it's been in the past. And in some cases, like one of the things you'll hear is the idea of private equity, that private equity is going to invest in, we've heard this at Florida State, right? This is, you know, these are the big capital investors, private equity. Well, in the world of business, the word equity means ownership. And so, you know, there's no easy solution here to say, we'll just take on some private equity money and that'll help us improve the stadium we need to, if we need a new basketball arena or whatever else, we'll take on some private equity money. But you're essentially giving away ownership. And some of these programs, if they're not careful, you're going to wake up one day and realize that Big State U is now owned by whatever private equity, you know, group that's out there. And is that better? I don't know. It's not obvious that it's worse, but it sure enough is going to be different. We'll obviously continue to follow that. Now, let's get ready to go cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. As I told you, I am so excited about the fact that coming up in the month of July, I'm going to get a chance to be on board Utopia of the Seas. And I'm so proud of this because I really do genuinely believe this is going to be such an awesome experience for so many of the people in our audience. If you've got a busy family, it's hard to get away for a full week. And sometimes a 7-night cruise, even though you might want that experience, hard to fully get, you know, that experience, schedules worked out so all people can be on board together. The 3- and 4-night cruise, oftentimes it's easier to schedule, especially for families. And so many families like sailing out of Port Canaveral because it's so close by. Well, now the newest in the Oasis class of ships is going to be built and dedicated for these 3- and 4-night sailings. And so Jessica Slater can tell you all about this. The time to book is now. The ship debuts in July, and you can get your travel plan for late summer, moving into fall, early 2025. The time now is to do that. So please reach out to Jessica. You can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. All right, now, let's go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean here right now. And there are a couple of stories I want to hit here. First of all, I thought that CBSSports.com had an interesting ranking the other day, sort of grading how certain teams have handled their transfer portal. Alabama, for instance, gets an A. I do believe, I think it remains to be seen how good Kalen DeBoer is going to be in his first year as Alabama coach. But in terms of mitigating some of the losses post Nick Saban, I think Alabama's done okay with it. They obviously lost Caleb Downs. They brought Caden Proctor back. You got Dominic Jackson, coming in. LT Overton, probably the biggest addition there, coming over from Texas A&M. But Alabama has probably made itself a better roster than it would be because of how it's handled the transfer portal. I think Auburn has improved here at least a little bit, although CBS Sports only gives them the B-minus grade. You know, the big thing for Auburn is just did not go out, and maybe they didn't feel like they needed to, but could not, did not go out and bring in the sort of transfer quarterback that gives you the belief that the Tigers can be obviously better on offense. Just weren't able to do that. Florida also gets a B-minus from CBS Sports. And I think the reminder here is that for teams, and this has been Florida now for a couple of years, hoping to use the portal as a way of waving a magic wand over the roster and getting dramatically better than you otherwise would have been, the portal, especially the spring portal, just hasn't provided that. LSU only gets a C+, and I think a lot of this goes back to the topic we discussed on Friday. Brian Kelly made their portal intentions clear. They wanted defensive linemen. To this point, they really haven't gotten them. This is a team that at one point in time would have been as aggressive as anyone, a program over the years that would have been as aggressive as anybody, bringing in, you know, whether it be transfer talent or in most years high school recruiting talent. But in this particular case, Brian Kelly has proven unsuccessful in bringing in the kind of defensive linemen perhaps they need there to really be a true championship contender. John Stinchcomb and I a moment ago talked about teams with somewhat favorable schedules. LSU, I would say, is one of those teams that has a somewhat favorable schedule, but do they have the roster to meet the moment against that schedule? I think Brian Kelly himself kind of wonders that. Texas gets an A+ from CBS Sports for, I think maybe the biggest thing there is bringing a guy like Isaiah Bond. Longhorns were great at receiver a year ago. In a big year coming up for Quinn Ewers, a guy like Bond gives them a chance to make sure that strength remains strong. And we obviously believe that Texas is well set up to be a real contender in the SEC here this season. Speaking of transfers in Alabama, it looks like the Crimson Tide could be in line to get DeShawn Jones. This is a defensive back that a lot of people like coming out of Wake Forest. The weird thing is, and I can't tell you why this is. To my knowledge, it's not really true, but there had been a little online chatter about Georgia perhaps being involved with Jones. I don't quite get where that's coming from. It seems like Georgia's got 8 million defensive backs. It seems like, for the most part, Georgia's roster's pretty full. I mean, best we can tell, Georgia's over the 85-man scholarship as it is. Obviously, it won't be over. They figured this out somehow, but it certainly seems like they might still slightly be over. There had been a little online chatter about Georgia and Jones. I don't quite think that's going to be true necessarily. And then finally, I'm going to give you this. This is a small thing, but I wanted to mention this. Continuing to kind of look back on the NFL draft here a little bit, one of the things I think was interesting is that Spencer Rattler kind of dropped. We ended up going a fifth round to the New Orleans Saints, really kind of, took a pretty big tumble in the NFL draft. And when you go back and read about the former South Carolina quarterback, also originally in Oklahoma, why he dropped, there was a lot of skepticism. I think NFL Network reporters have talked about this. A lot of skepticism within the league about Rattler because of the way that Rattler portrayed himself in that QB1 documentary that aired before Rattler arrived at Oklahoma. Kind of a little bit of a me first guy, not particularly mature there in that moment. And listen, I do believe quarterbacks have to hold themselves to a high standard. I just believe that's obviously true. But man, I do think it's really, really dangerous when we're going to look at a guy in high school and expect a guy in high school to be a finished product. And this to me is one of the, I would say, you know, slight downsides to the NIL era in which athletes younger and younger are getting paid as professionals. We expect a professional to be a pro and act like a pro. And, you know, sometimes for 17, 18-year-old young man, that's not always going to be the easiest thing to do. And sort of holding that against them forever seems really unfair. And we're being told by NFL Network reporters, in some cases, this may have happened for Rattler. Now, I realize that a lot of y'all are not Spencer Rattler fans. You don't really care, which is totally your prerogative. But I do think this is the wrong direction for the sport to go. Now, listen, NFL teams are risk averse. They're cautious about everything. I totally get that. But this idea that, hey, we can't draft you because of something you did when you're 17 years old, in all but the most extreme situations, that to me seems a little bit unfair. And as we move towards the professionalization of young football players, treating them like finished products at a very early age just seems like a huge mistake. And in this case, I think the NFL may have made that in the case of Rattler, because almost anybody around the situation at Columbia will tell you he was a much more mature version of himself there than he had been during his time at Oklahoma. And I know this past year, maybe not a great year, but you go back and look what they were able to do in 2022, Rattler was certainly playing at a pretty high level near the end of that season. So a point that I wanted to make based on some of the chatter after the NFL draft, we'll make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Oh, and before we wrap up here today, let me also give you a shout out to our friends at the Finnish Laundry. How much do you love the Finnish Laundry this time of year? When you're outside, you're in the patio, very soon pool season. I don't believe our pool in our neighborhood's open yet, but it should be opening up here really soon. And there's nothing I enjoy more than a little pool time with the Finnish Laundry. Whether it's the Laundry Cranberry, the Laundry Strong, 8.5% alcohol by volume, Laundry Zero, no carbs, no sugar, the traditional and the blue can, the grapefruit flavor, the gin kick, that is what the Finnish Laundry is all about. It tastes good any time of the year, but something about being outdoors, playing golf or going to the lake or fishing, whatever you got going on. The Finnish Laundry, the ready-to-drink cocktail that comes in a can, sort of looks like a beer, but it's not. It's a ready-to-drink cocktail. If you like mixed drinks, this is a mixed drink. You don't have to mix yourself. It's delicious. You're going to love it. So make sure you try some Finnish Laundry today online, thelongdrink.com. If you put in your zip code, you can find out where you can pick some up, including the peach-flavored version for a limited time, right here in the Peach State. I'm talking about the Finnish Laundry. So shout out here to the Georgia baseball team, the Diamond Dogs. Three-game sweep this weekend at the hand of Vanderbilt. We don't like Vanderbilt at all, the Vandy Boys, as they're called. So a good performance by UG. Also, yesterday, I had a chance to be there at the game. We weren't originally planning on going. We had some plans sort of fall through, so we just took the opportunity to sort of shoot over to a Foley Field. Had a great experience. And in addition to the fact that Georgia's playing very well right now, Charlie Connaughton hit another home run again yesterday. What a remarkable tear he's on. Got to give a shout out to the team itself for just making it a really good experience. I'm going to tell you a quick story. So my son had gotten, he's a young kid, had gotten a ball from the Georgia bullpen and had taken it to the dugout and get one of the Georgia players to sign it. When the player saw the ball, it's kind of an old, beat up, sort of waterlogged type ball. He went down to the dugout and brought back like a game used SEC NCAA stamp ball. Let me give a shout out here to our golden shoe winner today, Clayton Chadwick, who made just a great, first of all, having a very good season for Georgia, but a great experience for my son yesterday. And this wasn't just sort of a special thing here. These Georgia players were taking time with these kids. You get to run the bases on Sunday. I got a, you know, soon-to-be 9-year-old daughter. My son's 12. Like, they were loving this. These Georgia players were taking so much time with them and just being kind to them for coming out of the ballpark. It was a really fun experience. So Georgia baseball's playing very well right now, and I think the team itself is doing a really good job of making the experience on game day feel like sort of a fun thing to be a part of. Getting a chance to be down the field, run the bases on Sundays. Shout out to everybody at Foley Field for making that a tremendous experience, and including Clayton Chadwick, who did a really cool thing for my son that he did not have to do. So we'll give him a golden shoe there for that. Really, really fun stuff. Lousy stinking Gators. Let's do our Gatorator updater. It's been 1,276 days since Florida has beaten Georgia in football. We love that. We revel in that. Making fun of the lousy stinking Gators, that's not going out of style around here anytime soon. Y'all have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.